Welcome to Civilly Speaking with host Sean Harris. Each month, Civilly Speaking brings you interviews on practical and timely legal issues on the local and national level. We hope you enjoy today's show.
Hello, I'm your host Sean Harris, and this is episode 62 of Civilly Speaking, brought to you by the Ohio Association for Justice. I'm here with our guest today, Dennis Murray from Sandusky. Dennis, thanks so much for joining us here on Civilly Speaking.
Happy to participate.
Dennis is obviously an OAJ member, but is unique in that he is a former elected official, state representative in Ohio, and obviously it's election season now. Dennis, can you share with us what it was like to be a candidate running for state office?
Well, it was actually more fun than I thought it would be. I mean, we really do get an opportunity to get out and meet a lot of people that you otherwise don't meet. I'd been involved in local politics for many years before that in local elected office, and for some reason I went back to that still after the state house. But politics is, it sounds awful to a lot of people, but once you get involved, it changes your perspective. I think it made me a much better lawyer because I was able to relate to more people, and frankly, just running and giving presentation after presentation and speech after speech with very little time to prepare for one thing, going from one thing to the next, just made you better on your feet. And I think that is always going to help us as advocates for our clients, because that's really what you're doing. You're advocating on behalf of your constituents. You're advocating on behalf of the policies and the principles that are most important to you and are of particular importance for your constituents. But it's not that much of an extension from what we do as lawyers. So I loved running. Every year we had 8 or 9 parades, very old-fashioned in this area. Now, at the time, my kids were all young, and they were conscripted into service. But we still laugh about that a lot. Some of those parades are 10 years removed, but they're fond memories.
Well, and that's a good point about the kind of the overlaps or the analogy between campaigning and practicing. I mean, at a very basic level, what we do as lawyers, as trial lawyers, is talk to people.
That's right. And really, you get so many opportunities out on the campaign trail. And then if you're fortunate enough to be elected and have the opportunity to serve, which really is an amazing honor, it's something I hope many people have an opportunity to experience in different levels of public service. But Once you get out there and have those opportunities to speak, you really do get, I think, a much better understanding of where people are coming from. And there is nothing like going door to door in your hometown or your district or the neighboring city and talking to folks and understanding just exactly where they are, what their hardships are, what their perspectives are. You know, a lot of times we, as trial lawyers, spend a lot of time talking to jurors and or asking questions in depositions. Certainly in the context of a courtroom, we don't have what we should have in terms of an opportunity to hear back from the jurors. Some judges won't even let you talk to the jurors afterward. But in the context of going door to door or listening to constituents' concerns, hosting town hall meetings, you have a great opportunity to find out how people think and what their value sets are and really how common they are. But we, as trial lawyers, think of those value sets a certain way, and I think just all lawyers do that. We kind of define things the way we see things, but people are very different from that. They have the same, they may have the exact same set of values, but they express it a very different way. So I found all that to be fascinating. Still do.
And how about the importance for OAJ members of getting out and talking with those candidates for the State House?
You know, other than serving our clients on a day-to-day basis, I can't think of a more important thing to do. The last thing you want to do is develop that relationship or try to develop that relationship with your state legislator, either a representative or a Senate member, at the last minute when you're saying, no, don't pass that legislation. That's a bad bill. This is why I think it needs to be changed. You're too late. I mean, at that point, you're in the thick of things, and as a legislator, you're in the thick of things. You're in committee hearings. You're on the House floor, and you barely have time to read emails, and you certainly don't have much time to respond to calls. So it's incredibly important to develop that relationship in advance. And I had a lot of relationships with people who I didn't agree with. But they were really nice folks, and they didn't contribute to my campaigns, but they'd come to town halls, they would share their perspective, they'd visit me in Columbus. I don't think that's the most important thing, especially for those from far-flung areas of the state. I think it's easier to meet your representative or your senator in their home district. There are just more opportunities, it's a little bit more casual. And I find that to be more effective. But to develop that relationship over a period of time is incredibly important. And if you find the right candidate, obviously contributing to their campaign makes a difference. It's just human nature. That's a level of support, a personal level of support, that means that it doesn't mean that they're going to vote your way just because you contributed to them. That's just the silliest thing I ever heard of. But what it means is that they're just a little bit more attuned to what you have to say because you've expressed some support for them, and they want to see, what your concerns are, and they often take that very seriously. So, I think it's incredibly important to develop that relationship over time. It's a fundraiser. It's showing up if they hold in district office hours. There are lots of opportunities to meet your legislator. And if you happen to be down in Columbus for, OAJ or OSBA committee work, or you have the opportunity to argue a case in one of the Columbus courts, by all means, contact their office. See if they've got some time to drop in and see them. You'd be surprised how effective that is if you're from parts of the state. Now, for me, it was about a 2-hour, 15-minute drive to Columbus. And I didn't see that many folks from my district down in Columbus because of the drive. So if you're from those more far-flung areas, actually stopping in and just taking 15 minutes to say hello, it does help to cement that relationship. And then when you're asking for an opportunity to bend their ear and talk about why, some of the earlier, some of the earlier versions of the immunity bills were so much worse than what was ultimately passed, then they're that much more likely to listen to what you have to say.
Dennis, we're here in election season, and obviously there's a push to register to vote and to make sure people have the opportunity to vote during COVID. Did I read that in your race you won by something like 1,000 votes?
There was one race where I was close. I don't remember the numbers. And if it was that close, I don't think I want to remember that number. And that was right after the Affordable Care Act was passed. And actually, the Ohio Democratic Party did some polling and said, oh, you're up by 20 points. Don't worry about it. And I was like, well, okay. And I took my foot off the gas just a little tiny bit. And my wife said to me, no, you get back out there and you knock on some more doors. But the race changed that quickly because the Affordable Care Act and I think some of the I don't know what to call about it, the cynicism raised by the opponents of the Care Act caused that race to nationwide to tighten. I squeaked by, but a lot of my colleagues in caucus were thrown out that year. That was a tough year for Democrats.
Well, that's because people liked the Affordable Care Act. They just didn't like Obamacare.
Well, I never use that term because I think it's enduring. Here we are today in 2020, and people realize how terribly important that is. And it was an act that was somewhat contentious, certainly very contentious, I should say, at the time. But with time, That's just become part of the American landscape, and I think it will be with us forever.
Certainly the prospect of taking it away at this point seems quite dire.
It would just be, it would upend healthcare for so many people in this country. We haven't gone far enough in providing healthcare. We have many more miles to go, but I think, you know, you can see now we've had 4 years of a president and a legislature saying we're going to take it away and repeal and replace, and they don't know what they're going to replace it with, and they can't figure that out because there is no answer, because the public says when it comes to things like pre-existing conditions, that now is regarded as a human right, as it should be, because it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, OAJ is putting on a program called OAJ Votes and helping our members register clients and helping our members serve as poll workers. Do you have memories or stories about the importance of poll workers and how they support the fairness of elections?
You know, I don't have any bad stories, and I don't have any stories that are personal to my election, although I will tell you that whether they were R's or D's at the polling places for many, many years, I didn't even know. They were friendly faces. I think their presence there encouraged people to come back. And once my children started going to school, I would actually take them to school every morning. And we would go a little bit earlier on that particular morning because I would take them in to see what it's like to vote. And I was trying to inculcate them to the, you know, whole idea of, look, this is just part of what you do as an American. And I'm proud to say they all vote, and they're all adults today, but they all vote religiously, and they have a fond memory of getting all those little I voted stickers, even when they were too young to vote.
Dennis, obviously we're in the midst of a pandemic now. How is campaigning different during this time?
You know, I was wondering about how it would be different and how it is that I would go about it. Certainly social media has become so much more important with each passing year. The current Democratic state rep for the area in which I live was an intern for me when I was in the House, Alexis Miller. And so I talked to her recently and asked her how it was going and what she was doing. And, you know, you really can't go door to door. You can do lit drops. And the phone banking has become so much more important, and the social media outreach has become so much more important. And I thought it would be a lot more difficult to raise money. I think it's still difficult. I mean, that's the hardest part of campaigning, period, bar none. It's just difficult. And so when we have members that step up and provide financial support, it is very much appreciated. But she said that she has raised an incredible amount of money just on the Internet, people just stopping on her website, contributing. So I think there's a real enthusiasm for the race this year. By the way, her name is Alexis Miller, and I know her very well, and she will be a true friend of OAJ. She had an opportunity to work for 2 years in my office. I've stayed in touch with her over the years, and she has done a lot in politics on helping out the caucus, the House and Senate over the years. So she will be a very fine representative, and I will certainly encourage any of our members to support her as I have.
You know, speaking of the the horse race between now and the election date, let me pick your brain regarding the House Bill 6 issue. And for those who don't know, that's the bailout bill for the two nuclear plants in Ohio. How do you see that affecting the election?
Well, it's a fascinating question, and I filed a ratepayer suit, a class action suit, based upon the same RICO allegations that the federal government has, and we've been looking at a lot of those questions, and I'm thinking about that, and I think that you're going to find a lot of members who voted in favor of HB 6 who don't have nuclear power plants in their backyards, which includes our our district, and obviously one over there on the other side of Cleveland. But I think that's going to be tough for people to explain how it is they voted for HB 6 when there was no benefit to their particular area. I think that may tip the balance in some races. We'll see. And it's fascinating to me to see how the new speaker is approaching all of this, because General Assembly and the governor know that they need to repeal HB 6. But the question becomes then, what do you replace it with? And how do you ever take the taint out of this system when 10 of the people who were elected as a result of the bribery money are still in the House? And we see a householder himself had the audacity to show up and vote yesterday. So, you know, you've got at least 11 members of the House who are deeply tainted by this HB 6 money, by the First Energy money. How are they going to replace that? Is that going to even come up for a vote before the election? I suspect not.
Yeah, the timing is certainly makes things a lot more difficult for them.
Yeah, I would not want to be in Speaker Cupp's shoes, because he does face a lot of political pressure to repeal HB 6. But then the question is always going to be, how did you take the taint out of it, and does he replace it after the general election in lame duck, or wait till a new General Assembly is sworn in January? He has some tough decisions to make. And, you know, that nuclear power it's controversial. Some people support it, some people don't. But if you've got an existing plant and you've already built the doggone thing and you've engaged in all of the, you know, the downward or the negative activity that goes into building one of those big plants, there's a good case for keeping them open. And so there's a good case for having a variety, a diversity of energy sources. So it'll be interesting to see how all that shakes out.
Anything else that you would like to discuss or cover?
The only other thing that I would mention, Sean, is I would really encourage more of our members to take a couple years and serve in the General Assembly, and do so with the understanding that it really is going to require that you put your private practice on the back burner. And maybe do it a little bit younger in your career, or do it older in your career. I did it kind of mid-career, and it was difficult to do that with a caseload that I had existing. I figured it out, and judges were quite understanding of that to a point. But then after that, you know, the cases still have to get tried. You still need to take care of your clients. But it was a tremendous opportunity, and it has served me well as a lawyer. And I will say that there are so few lawyers left in the General Assembly that those of us who do run and do have the fortune of taking office will find that they have an enormously disproportionate amount of influence on legislation. So, if you want to make a difference, a real long-term difference for the state and for our clients as a whole, I'd really encourage you to do that either. You know, do that in your 30s, at the beginning of your career, or let's say late 50s or 60s sometime. It's a lot of fun. It's textbook Americana, and I would really encourage anyone to do it. We don't have a lot of OHA members in the legislature these days. I've taken my turn at bat, and I'd encourage others to do so too.
And Dennis, talk with us. You mentioned, you know, the influence of being a lawyer and having the legal training. Talk to us about being in the legislature and not necessarily being in the majority, and how much influence you can have.
Well, I served in both the majority and in the minority, and they were very, very different, and they both had their pros and cons. Certainly, if you are in the majority, you've got more of an ability to shape legislation. You're running committees, or if you're not the chair, you're in a more of a leadership position than you would be if you're in the minority. When you're in the minority, it's quite different. At that point, you are either chastising the other side, and that isn't always the most effective thing to do, or you're engaged in really line by line. If you have a good committee chair, You can be engaged in line-by-line discussions about why this particular provision isn't the right way to handle it. Here's a different way to make it read. You have a tremendous amount of support from the Legislative Service Commission, so if you need to get an amendment to offer to a legislator, especially another lawyer who's on the other side of the aisle, say, look, I don't think this is what you mean, or here's a problem you're going to run into, and then, especially if you can base it on personal experience, and you have the opportunity to take it and in not in a partisan way. You can be very, very effective in a nonpartisan way, getting other members of the other party when you're in the minority to make changes to their own bill. And you don't have to tear them apart on the floor to get it done. It's a lot of that good work gets done quietly in the back of the chambers or during committee work.
Well, Dennis Murray, thank you very much for joining us here on Civilly Speaking.
It's been my pleasure, Sean.
And thanks to all our listeners out there. If you like our show and want to learn more, check out civillyspeaking.com. And please leave us a review on iTunes. We'll see you here on the next episode of Civilly Speaking.